Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
The moving truck backed into the gravel drive just as the late afternoon sun slanted through the oaks, turning the old Victorian farmhouse golden shadow. I killed the engine and sat there for a second, keys still in my hand, watching dust settle around the tires. 6 months since Sarah's accident, and this was the first place that didn't feel like a temporary crash pad. Sophie was already out of the car, sneakers crunching on the stones, pointing at the wraparound porch like she'd discovered a castle.
Dad, look, there's a swing.
I forced the smile. Yeah, Bug, we can fix it up. Money was tight. Sarah's life insurance had covered the funeral and the first few months, but not much else. The house had come to me through a will, left by her grandmother, Eleanor, who'd raised Sarah alone after her husband walked out. Eleanor had died 5 years ago, leaving the place untouched. We couldn't afford much else, and the realtor said the market was soft. Renovate, sell, start over somewhere smaller, somewhere brighter. That was the plan. Inside, the air smelled of old wood and faint lavender. The wallpaper was peeling in long curls, the hardwood floor scratched from decades of feet. Sophie ran from room to room, claiming the one with the window seat as hers. I let her. She needed something to be excited about. The first night, we ordered pizza because the kitchen was still half-boxed. Sophie ate 3 slices, sauce on her chin, and asked for a story before bed.
"Tell me about Grandma Eleanor,"
she said, tugging the quilt up to her chin.
"Mommy said she was the best mommy ever."
I hesitated. Sarah had always spoken of Eleanor with a mix of fondness and something sharper, something she never quite named. I pulled the rocking chair closer.
"She was very careful," I said.
"She loved your mom a lot, made sure she had everything she needed." Sophie's eyes were wide.
"Did she tuck mommy in every night?"
"Yeah," I said, "every night." She smiled, satisfied, and fell asleep holding my hand. Later, while unpacking the hallway closet, I found a small photo album tucked behind a stack of moth-eaten coats. The cover was cracked leather. I opened it. The first picture was black and white. Eleanor, maybe 30, sitting at a kitchen table with a young Sarah, 5 or 6 on her lap. Eleanor was smiling, but the smile was too wide, lips stretched thin over teeth, eyes bright and unblinking. Sarah's face was pinched. Her mouth was open, a spoonful of something halfway in. Eleanor's hand was firm on the back of Sarah's head, pressing the spoon forward. The caption, written in neat cursive: "Good girls finish their supper." I stared at it too long. The smile didn't reach Eleanor's eyes. It was the kind of smile you give when you're trying to prove something to yourself. I closed the album and shoved it back on the shelf. Creepy family history, nothing more. Downstairs, the house settled around me. Old timbers creaking, wind moving through the eaves. I told myself it was just grief making everything feel heavier. Sophie was asleep. We were here. We were going to be okay. I turned off the kitchen light and went to bed, telling myself the faint smell of milk and bleach in the hallway was just the old house. It had to be. For the first time in months, I let myself hope that maybe, just maybe, this place could be a second chance. The renovations started small, ripping up the peeling linoleum in the kitchen, pulling down the water-damaged drywall in the hallway. I figured we'd patch things up enough to sell the place by summer. Sophie helped where she could, handing me tools with serious little nods, proud to be Daddy's helper. On the third day, I pried open a section of baseboard under the main staircase to check for rot. Behind the trim was a narrow panel, nailed shut and painted over years ago. I worked the crowbar until it popped free with a dry crack. Inside was a crawl space, barely 3 feet high, dark and dusty, smelling faintly of milk gone sour and something chemical. A few old jars and a child's shoe sat inside the opening. I stared at it for a long moment, then nailed the panel back in place. I told myself I'd deal with it later. The house was full of weird little corners. That night, I went to bed exhausted, Sophie already asleep down the hall. I left the bedroom door cracked the way she liked it, and sleep came fast. I woke at 2:57 a.m. The digital clock glowed red on the nightstand. The room was cold, colder than it should have been with the heat running. I sat up slowly, rubbing my eyes. And that's when I saw her. She stood at the foot of the bed, too tall for the ceiling, her head bent slightly forward so the crown nearly brushed the plaster. Thin as a coat hanger under a long, stained nightgown that hung to the floor. The fabric was yellowed, streaked with old stains and something darker. Her face was pale, almost grey. But the smile was the worst part. Lips stretched too wide, too many teeth showing, gums pulled back like she was trying to prove how happy she was. She didn't move at first, just watched me. Then she stepped closer, silent, no creak of floorboards, and reached down. Her hands were long, fingers knobby and white. She took the edge of the quilt and gently, carefully, tugged it around my shoulders, smoothing it flat against my chest like I was a child. "Good boys need their rest," she whispered. Her voice was soft, almost sweet, but it carried an echo that didn't belong in the room, like it came from farther away than the foot of the bed. She lingered a second longer, smile fixed, then turned and walked out. The hallway light was off, but I saw her silhouette pass through the open doorway and disappear towards Sophie's room. I sat there, heart hammering, sweat cold on my back. Sleep paralysis, I told myself. Brief hallucination. I'd read about it. Widowers seeing their wives, parents seeing lost kids. This wasn't Sarah. This was something else. I lay back down, pulled the blanket tighter, and stared at the ceiling until the clock hit 3:15 and the cold eased. The next morning, Sophie was already at the kitchen table, eating cereal, humming to herself. I poured coffee with shaking hands. "Sleep okay, bug?" She nodded, spoon halfway to her mouth. "A nice tall lady tucked me in." I froze. "She said, good girls need their rest." Sophie smiled, milk on her upper lip. "She has a really big smile, like this." She stretched the mouth wide with her fingers, showing all her teeth. My stomach dropped. I looked toward the hallway. The crawl space under the stairs was still nailed shut. Nothing had moved. I forced a laugh, thin and unconvincing. Must have been a dream, kiddo. Sophie shrugged and went back to her cereal. I stood there, coffee going cold in my mug, staring at the closed panel. The house had been empty for years before we moved in. No one else had lived here since Eleanor died. The second night came quieter than the first. I'd left every light in the house burning. Hallway, bathroom, Sophie's nightlight shaped like a star. Even the porch bulb outside. I told myself it was for comfort. Sophie had asked why we were camping with lights, and I said it was because the house was old and we were chasing away the dark. She accepted it like kids do. I went to bed at 10, exhausted from prying up more floorboards and patching drywall. Sophie was already asleep, her door cracked open. I left mine the same way. I woke at 2:57 a.m. The room was cold again, colder than last night. I sat up fast, heart already racing before I even knew why. She was in the doorway, taller than before, head bent to clear the frame, nightgown hanging like a wet cloth. The smile was wider, lips stretched so far I could see the dark line where her gums met teeth. Too many of them, overlapping like broken tiles. She didn't speak at first, just watched with those bright, unblinking eyes. Then she moved. She crossed the room in three long steps and reached for me. Her hand clamped around my jaw, fingers like cold iron, impossibly strong. I tried to pull away, my neck strained, muscles burning, but she held me still as if I were a doll. With her other hand, she produced a chipped porcelain bowl from nowhere, old floral pattern, the kind Eleanor would have used. Inside was cold milk and torn hunks of white bread, sodden and dripping. "Good boys finish their supper," she whispered, voice soft and sing-song. She forced my mouth open. I tasted the milk first, sour, too cold, coating my tongue. Then the bread, wet, heavy, was shoved in until it filled my cheeks. I gagged, tried to spit, but a grip tightened. Fingers dug into my jaw hinges, forcing my teeth apart wider. I thrashed, my left hand clawed at a wrist, skin smooth, unnaturally cool, with no give. My right hand swung wild, catching the bedpost. Two fingers bent backward with a sick snap. Pain exploded up my arm, white hot. She kept feeding. Bread after bread, milk poured straight down my throat. I choked, coughed, milk bubbling out of my nose. My stomach heaved. I tried to scream, but nothing came but wet gurgles. The bowl emptied. She set it aside and smiled wider, teeth gleaming in the clock light. "Good boy," she said. "All done." She released me. I fell forward, vomiting onto the sheets. Milk, bread, bile. My broken fingers throbbed, useless. I gasped, retched again, tears streaming. From the hallway came small footsteps. Sophie appeared in the doorway, rubbing her eyes, hair wild from sleep. "Daddy?" She saw the mess, the spilled milk pooling on the floor, the vomit, my shaking hands clutching the sheets. The smiling woman was gone. No sound of retreat, no creak of stairs. Just gone. I wiped my mouth with the back of my arm, forced my voice steady. It's okay, Bug. Just a nightmare. I had a bad dream and got sick. Sophie's eyes were wide. She looked at the milk, the broken fingers I was trying to hide, the soaked sheets.
Was it the tall lady?
She asked quietly. My heart stopped. I swallowed bile. No, sweetie, just a bad dream. Go back to bed. I'll clean up. She hesitated, then nodded slowly and padded back down the hall. I sat there in the dark, broken fingers curled against my chest, tasting sour milk and fear. The smile hadn't wavered once. Not when she fed me, not when I fought, not when I vomited. It never wavered. And now I knew it could kill me. Not with claws or teeth. With care, with good boys finish their supper. I looked towards Sophie's room. The hallway light flickered once, then stayed steady. I didn't sleep again that night. I just sat up, broken hand cradled in my lap, listening for footsteps. That didn't come. The morning after the force feeding, I could only taste sour milk and bile, no matter how much I brushed my teeth. Sunlight poured through the bedroom curtains in thin, dusty bars. My hand was a swollen purple mess, fingers taped crookedly with electrical tape, throbbing every time my heart beat. The sheets were stiff with dried vomit and spilled milk, the room still smelling faintly of sour dairy and fear. I sat up slowly, ribs aching from where I'd hit the floor, and looked at the clock. 7:42 a.m. The room felt normal. No cold spots or whispers. Daylight had come, and the house felt quiet, like any other old farmhouse on a sunny morning. I exhaled hard. Maybe the thing only came at night. Maybe it was tied to the dark, to the hours when grief and exhaustion made everything feel realer than it should. If that was true, if daylight was safe, then we could leave. Right now, before sunset. I swung my legs over the side of the bed, ignored the sharp pain in my hand, and started moving. I packed light, one duffel for me, clothes, Sophie's meds, the little cash I had left, her birth certificate, and my phone charger. Another for her, pajamas, stuffed animals, the blanket she couldn't sleep without. I worked fast, quiet, listening for any creak that didn't belong. Sophie was still asleep in her room. I cracked the door, watched the chest rise and fall under the quilt, then closed it softly. Downstairs, I zipped the bags, set them by the front door, and went back up to wake her. She blinked awake, hair a wild halo, rubbing her eyes with both fists. "Hey, Bug," I said, keeping my voice light, even though my hands screamed when I lifted a blanket. "We're going on a surprise adventure trip today. Like camping, but in a motel with a pool. Pack your favorite toys and pajamas. Quick, okay? We're leaving soon." Her face lit up like Christmas. "A pool? Really?" "Really. Adventure starts today. Go on, pack fast." She scrambled out of bed, giggling, and ran to a toy chest. I heard her talking to a stuffed rabbit about the big trip as I hurried back downstairs. I loaded the car in the driveway, duffels in the trunk, Sophie's car seat buckled in the back. The morning air was crisp, birds chirping, sun climbing higher. No shadows moved wrong. Just a normal day.
I slammed the trunk shut and called toward the house. Sophie, come on, Bug, time to go. Silence. I called again, louder. Sophie, adventure's waiting. Nothing. A small, cold prickle started at the base of my neck. I stepped back inside, voice sharper now. Sophie! The hallway was empty. Her backpack lay at the bottom of the stairs, empty, toys scattered across the floor like they'd been dropped in a hurry. A single, milky white footprint, still fresh, led from the bottom step up into the shadowed landing above. I froze. From the darkness at the top of the stairs came a soft, wet sound. Drip, drip, drip. Then a voice. Not Sophie's, but close enough to twist my guts, sweet and sing-song, echoing down the stairwell. Grandma says, naughty boys don't get to play with their toys. The air turned cold. I looked up. She stood at the top landing, taller than the ceiling allowed, head bent forward, nightgown dripping sour milk onto the wood. Her smile stretched wider than yesterday, teeth gleaming in the morning light that shouldn't have reached her. Naughty boy, she whispered, trying to run away with my new baby. A long arm lashed out, faster than anything that tall should move. It caught me across the chest and slammed me backward. I hit the stairs hard, tumbling down in a tangle of limbs and pain. My broken fingers smashed against the railing. Fresh agony exploded up my arm. I landed at the bottom in a heap, gasping. From upstairs, Sophie's excited laugh cut off mid-tone, sharp and sudden, like a switch flipped. The front door slammed shut behind me with a sound like bones breaking. The lock clicked. The windows fogged over from the inside. All exits sealed. I lay on the floorboards, staring up at the ceiling, chest heaving, hand throbbing. Sophie was silent. I searched the house like a man possessed. Every closet, under every bed, behind every curtain. I called Sophie's name until my throat felt like sandpaper. Nothing. No sign of her, except that abandoned backpack at the bottom of the stairs, toys scattered, like she'd been playing one second and gone the next. Then I saw the footprints. Small, perfect child-sized prints made of sour milk leading from the stairs straight to the sealed crawlspace panel under the landing. The milk was still fresh, still glistening on the wood. I dropped to my knees and pressed my ear against the painted panel. Faint breathing, slow, shallow, but alive. Sophie, I whispered, voice cracking. Bug, I'm here. Daddy's here. A soft, muffled sound came back. Her breathing hitched, like she was trying not to cry. Then, the voice rolled through the house, gentle and patient, the way my own grandmother used to speak when I was small and scraped my knee. Good boys stay and learn, dear. Behave yourself, and you'll get your toy back. The hallway lights flickered once, and in front of me was a tattered paper note. Three sentences were on it, written in neat, looping cursive like a grandmother's birthday card. Finish everything Grandma puts on your plate. Waste not, want not. Keep all the lights off after the sun goes down. We don't want you staying up all night, do we? Never speak your little girl's name after bedtime.
little ones need their rest, and calling wakes them up. I stared at the words until my eyes burned. They weren't threats. They were polite reminders, the kind of things a loving grandma would say while pressing another helping of mashed potatoes on you, while tucking you in at night for a good night's rest, while shushing you when you try to call for your child after lights out because she needs a beauty sleep. Except that these rules were law, and breaking them could cost me my daughter. I stood slowly and walked to the kitchen. A chipped porcelain bowl lay on the table, cold milk, torn hunks of white bread, exactly like last night. It hadn't been there 5 minutes ago. The voice came again, coaxing, almost fond. "Eat up, dear. Growing boys need their strength. Finish everything on your plate." I looked toward the crawl space. Sophie's breathing was still there, faint and waiting, trusting me to do the right thing. So I sat and picked up the spoon with my good hand. I forced the first bite down. It was soggy, sour, and cold. My stomach lurched, but I swallowed. Another bite, another. When the bowl was empty, a new one appeared beside it, identical, refilling itself. The voice sighed happily. "There's a good boy. Clean your plate, and we'll talk about letting your little one come out to play." From the crawl space came Sophie's faint breathing. I choked down the next spoonful, tears mixing with the milk on my chin. I obeyed, because every time I finished the bowl, the breathing from the crawl space grew a little louder, a little closer. But every time I hesitated, even for a second, the house responded. Doors creaked narrower, ceilings sagged an inch lower. The hallway wallpaper tightened like skin over bone. I kept eating. I kept the lights off after sunset. I didn't say Sophie's name once the sun went down. All while my mind raced, quietly, coldly, mapping the house, noting every weak floorboard, every loose nail, every corner where the entity seemed slower to appear. The next day, I sat at the kitchen table. My broken fingers were wrapped tighter now, the tape cutting into swollen skin. But the pain was background noise compared to the silence from the crawl space. I hadn't heard Sophie's breathing since waking up. I prepared myself for the worst because the rules said to finish everything on my plate, and I couldn't risk another tightening of the house. The chipped porcelain bowl was already there when I sat down, the same cold milk, torn hunks of white bread floating like drowned islands. The milk hadn't been cold 5 minutes ago. Now it was icy, condensation beading on the rim. I picked up the spoon with my good hand. The first bite went down like wet cement. My stomach clenched, still raw from last night. I swallowed another bite. The bowl never emptied. Every time I scraped the bottom clean, the milk rose again, bread appearing in fresh pieces, as if someone was silently tearing it from the loaf behind my back. I ate faster. My throat burned, my stomach swelled, pressing against my ribs until each breath felt like inhaling through a straw. Then she was there. The smiling grandma stood at the far end of the table, head bent under the light fixture, nightgown dripping slow drops of sour milk onto the floorboards. Her smile stretched wider. "You're not eating fast enough. Are you not hungry?" she said, voice soft and fond, the way a grandmother might chide a picky eater. She reached across the table, arms stretching longer than it should, and clamped her cold fingers around my jaw. The grip was iron. I tried to pull away, my neck strained, muscles tearing. She forced my mouth open wider. The spoon appeared in her other hand, heaped with sodden bread and milk. She shoved it in. I gagged, milk bubbled out of my nose. I choked, coughed, tried to spit. But her fingers tightened, holding my jaw shut until I had to swallow or drown. Bite after bite, bowl after bowl. My stomach ballooned, painful, distended, pressing against my ribs. In my struggle, I felt something crack inside. A rib gave with a wet snap. I screamed around the bread, but the sound came out muffled, wet. From the crawl space came Sophie's breaths again, weak. I fought, clawed at her wrist with my good hand, my broken fingers smashed against the table edge, fresh agony exploding up my arm. I kicked the chair backward, tried to stand, but she pinned me to the seat with one hand on my shoulder, weight like stone. More bread, more milk. My vision tunneled. Milk poured down my chin, soaked my shirt, and pooled in my lap. I vomited once, twice, hot, sour, burning my throat on the way up. She didn't stop. The vomit splattered on the table. She scooped it back into the bowl with a spoon and fed it to me again. "Good boys don't waste food," she soothed, smile never wavering, eyes bright and unblinking. I collapsed forward, forehead hitting the table, half drowned in milk, stomach so swollen I couldn't draw a full breath. My cracked rib ground against itself with every gasp, my broken fingers dangled uselessly. She released me. The bowl was empty again, for now. She straightened, head brushing the ceiling, and glided backward toward the hallway. "Finish your supper, dear," she said sweetly. "Grandma will check on you later." She vanished into the shadows. I slid to the floor, milk pooling around me, tears mixing with a mess on my face. From the crawl space came Sophie's faint gasps. I pressed my forehead to the cold floorboards and sobbed, quiet, broken and helpless. I had to keep going, because every time I obeyed, I bought her a few more hours, and every time I fought, the house closed in tighter. I was playing the perfect grandson, while my body broke, while my daughter waited in the dark, while the smiling grandma smiled and waited for me to finish my plate. The endless supper left me broken on the kitchen floor. I lay there for what felt like hours, staring at the ceiling beams, listening to the house breathe around me. Sophie's faint breathing from the crawl space had gone quiet again. Just silence. I was done. I had nothing left. No fight and no plan. Just a hollowed out shell that had tried to be a good boy and failed. If obeying forever meant she'd be let out someday, safe, whole, even if she called that thing grandma, then fine. I'd eat every bowl, I'd keep the lights off, I'd never say a name after dark again. Whatever it took. I dragged myself across the floorboards on my elbows, broken hand trailing uselessly behind me, milk smeared in my wake. The crawl space panel under the stairs loomed ahead, sealed tight, painted wood smooth and unyielding. I reached it, collapsed against it, and pressed my forehead to the cool surface. I could hear her breathing again, so faint, so far away. It sounded like she was underwater. "I'm sorry, bug," I whispered,
voice cracking. I'm so sorry. I tried. I really tried. Tears mixed with the milk on my face. I closed my eyes. And something small inside me, something that had been buried under the pain and milk and fear, caught fire. No, not like this. I would not let that smiling thing raise my daughter. I would not let it teach her to finish her plate, to keep quiet after dark, to call it grandma. Sophie was mine. She was Sarah's. She was ours. And if the only way to get her back was to crawl into the dark and die trying, then that was what I'd do. I opened my eyes. The panel was still there, nailed shut, but the nails looked just loose enough to pull open. I pried at the edge with my good hand, splinters dug into my palm. I wedged my fingers under the wood and pulled. The panel came away with a dry crack. The crawl space gasped open, narrow, barely 2 feet high. The sour milk smell rolled out like fog, thick and choking. Dust motes drifted in the hallway light. I didn't hesitate. I squeezed in on my belly, shoulders scraping plaster, broken fingers dragging uselessly behind me. The space was tight, tighter than it looked. My cracked ribs screamed with every inch. Dust rained down into my eyes, my mouth. The milk smell coated my tongue. Behind me, the panel snapped shut on its own. Boards groaned, the crawl space tightened immediately, walls pressing in, ceiling dropping, like the house was exhaling and closing around me. I kept crawling, forward into the dark, because Sophie was in there somewhere, and I was coming for her. Rules be damned, I was going to get my daughter back, or die trying. The crawl space swallowed me whole. Darkness was thick. It filled my mouth, my nose, my ears. My broken fingers dragged uselessly behind me, scraping plaster and wood, sending fresh jolts of pain up my arm with every inch. Like someone was slowly twisting a blade inside my chest. I crawled on elbows and knees, shoulders wedging against the narrow joists, forcing me to exhale completely to squeeze forward. The walls felt like they were breathing in time with me, closing tighter each time I inhaled. I kept moving, because Sophie was in here somewhere. Her faint breathing echoed ahead like a heartbeat in the dark. Then, the voice came, soft, grandmotherly, sweet as milk. Come along, dear. Grandma will make you both perfect. It wasn't from one direction. It rolled through the beams, the plaster, the dirt under my palms, everywhere at once. I froze, breath catching. The space behind me groaned, floorboards creaked, dust rained down into my eyes. Wet dragging sounds followed, nightgown fabric rustling against wood, milk dripping in thick, slow plops. Good boys don't leave their toys behind, she whispered, closer now. Grandma is very disappointed. Panic clawed up my throat. The passage narrowed, shoulders jammed hard. I had to twist sideways, ribs screaming, to inch forward. The walls pressed to my chest like a closing coffin. I couldn't breathe, couldn't turn. Just crawl, forward, always forward. Her long fingers brushed my ankle, cold, knobby and wet. I lunged, clawed through a tighter section where the joist pinched even closer. Plaster tore at my shoulders, skin splitting, blood slicked my shirt. I pushed harder, elbows bleeding, rib grinding, bone on bone. Until I broke through into a small, hidden pocket chamber. The space opened just enough to let me roll onto my back. I gasped, sucking air that tasted like rot. And there she was, Sophie, waist deep in it, encased in a thick, off-white, lumpy mass that clung to her like wet dough. It looked exactly like old, milk-soaked bread left to rot, spongy and curdled, pale yellow in places, faintly sweet-sour, the surface slowly pulsing as if digesting her. Strands of it wrapped over her arms, her chest, her closed eyes. Her head lolled to the side, lips parted, breathing shallow but steady, unconscious, cold to the touch. I gagged once, then lunged forward. I tore at the mass with my good hand, fingers sank in, spongy. The texture was wrong, too much like flesh. I ripped handfuls away, gagging on the sour sweet smell and the way it clung to my skin. I used my teeth when my hands wasn't enough, bit, tore, spat. The substance pulsed under my fingers, trying to reform. I kept going, piece by piece, until I freed her arms, her waist, her legs. She was limp, cold but breathing. I scooped her against my chest, broken hand useless, cracked ribs stabbing with every movement, and started crawling backward, shoulders scraped raw against the joists. The space was even tighter now, walls closer. I dragged her with me, elbows bleeding, breath coming in short, ragged gasps. The dragging sound behind me grew louder, closer. "Naughty boy," the voice said, no longer sweet. She shot the words sharp, hungry. "Bringing my new baby back out? Grandma is very disappointed." Long fingers brushed my ankle, then gripped. I twisted in panic, trying to kick, but the space was too tight. My ribs screamed. I couldn't breathe, couldn't turn. Just feel her grip tightening, pulling me back inch by inch into the dark. Sophie, still unconscious in my arms, stirred weakly for the first time since I'd freed her. Her small voice rasped out, cracked and faint. "Daddy?" The word cut through the crawl space like a blade, and in that small moment, the walls loosened ever so slightly. The smiling grandma recoiled. A heartbroken wail tore from her, high, grandmotherly, and broken all at once. "But I'm the better mother." Her fingers loosened, just for a heartbeat. I didn't hesitate. I kicked. Boots slammed into her arm, and the joists around me, desperate, the same frantic motion I'd used when she pinned me to the kitchen table. The impact cracked something inside the crawl space. Boards snapped, plaster rained down in heavy sheets. The weakened structure, already stressed from years of damp and neglect, gave way behind me. The smiling grandma shrieked in disappointment. "Naughty boy, breaking the house!" The collapse roared forward, joists buckling, dust choking the air, milk-soaked bread mass splattering like wet concrete. Her fingers slipped from my ankle as the tunnel caved. I hauled Sophie forward through the chaos, shoulders tearing against splintered wood, ribs stabbing with every inch. Debris rained on my back, a board cracked against my skull. I kept moving. Ahead, a faint grey square of light. I lunged. I dragged Sophie through into the basement, then up the stairs,
out the side door into the yard. Behind us, the house groaned, deep, like a beast exhaling its last breath. We collapsed in the grass. The smiling grandma's wail faded into the walls. The farmhouse stood silent, partially caved in where the crawl space had been. Sophie coughed once, weakly, eyes still closed, but breathing steadier now. I held her against my chest, broken hand curled protectively around her, cracked rib aching with every gasp. We didn't go back inside. We never would. We spent the night in the car at a distant gas station lot, doors locked, lights on. The next day, I drove us far away to relatives and never looked back. The farmhouse was condemned and demolished by the county 2 weeks later.